Good afternoon, and welcome to a special episode of Let's Be Honest with Just Jonda. This is one of those times when you didn't hear any fancy music going in. You're just going to get it unedited and however it comes out, because we're in a space that is too important for me to worry about the frills. Today is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. It is a day that many have been waiting for months, over 6 months, and it cannot be stated enough that the individuals who have waited the most and for whom this 6+ months has probably felt like 60 years, and that would be the family and close friends and acquaintances of Breonna Taylor. And I want to certainly always maintain a proper respect and perspective as it relates to them. As for the rest of us in the midst of this fight for social justice, in the midst of a movement probably unlike any the world has ever known, when so many are united behind one cause, even bigger than the civil rights movements of the past, no less important. They were the most critical of the modern age to get us where we are today. But certainly this summer, beginning with the horrible death of George Floyd and the awareness brought about the death of Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, the movement has grown. It has gone worldwide and has had people from all walks of life calling for justice. And again, those calls for justice have come from around the world. There are individuals in soccer fields in nations that many will never travel to that are saying Black lives do indeed matter. So what happened today that makes this stand out even more than the many times I have brought some of these issues before you? I believe my second episode was actually about Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and George Floyd, really breaking down their cases. So I won't belabor you with that, but simply to remind you of a pivotal date that changed the lives of so many, that a day that changed what people would put on t-shirts, that would change the fact that Oprah Winfrey never put anyone else but herself on OWN magazine, that spawned an incredible documentary that is on Netflix right now, done by the New York Times, and on and on and on. But it is a day that, if it could be taken back, or a night that, if it could be taken back, everybody involved would happily not have to say her name. And that is March 13th, 2020. When three officers came to the apartment of Breonna Taylor, who was there with her companion, and upon using a no-knock warrant, which there still seems to be a bit of ambiguity in terms of what went on, who said what, whether or not there was an answer given when her companion called out, that night, that fatal night, despite some individuals being wounded, Breonna Taylor was killed in her own home after getting out of bed to figure out what's the commotion going on in my apartment. Probably sleepy, disoriented, afraid, and her life was snuffed out in a hail of 5, maybe 6, because apparently her life is still not important enough for the individuals investigating this crime, individuals who are supposed to be the best and the brightest in their fields. They can't even correctly articulate whether or not the other item that was just so callously mentioned as being in her body was a bullet or not. Yet today, thanks to a reporter who was listening closely, we find out that there's still questions. And one of them is, was she shot 5 times, as the coroner report says, or 6? Now, before I go further into the law and get even deeper on this, I think it's important to note at the outset, because there are going to be so many people who are going to talk about this ad nauseum, the talking heads, other podcasts, everyone, and probably people like me who are attorneys, and not just attorneys, but in my case, having a background of over 20 years as a criminal defense attorney, who will talk about, as I'm going to as well, the specifics of what the charges mean and, you know, how much time the person may get, all of that. Okay, I'm going to talk about that because I know that individuals will have questions. But honestly, I don't think it really matters. The one thing that, if you take absolutely nothing away from what I am going to discuss here with you today, is the fact that no one, absolutely no one, not former Officer Hankinson, not Jonathan Mattingly, Miles Cosgrove, no one on the scene that night, and again, bringing up Cosgrove, the individual whose bullet may have been the one to actually go into Brianna, and again, we'll get into that in a moment. No one was charged specifically with causing the death of Brianna Taylor. Now, again, understand what I'm saying. This is not about whether or not anyone was found guilty, because we wouldn't be to that point anyway. This is just the grand jury piece, is just the beginning and a long road now that a case related peripherally to this incident or to this situation is in court. Because up until this point, there was no court. Everything was this investigation that seems to have been so arduous, yet when it comes to the really important questions, I don't know, folks seem to get a little cagey. But again, I want to repeat, because it cannot bear repeating enough, that not one person has been charged criminally in the death of Brianna Taylor. No one is on the brink of being found criminally liable in a court of the death of Brianna Taylor. And I want to reinforce that point, not to get anyone riled up. I think it's a point that is important to enforce, because in the discussion of the charges that were filed, there was the glaring absence, particularly of Attorney General Cameron, of him flat out saying it. it was acknowledged in some nice, apologetic, we shall overcome, I'm with you, I'm like you, I'm a black man who just happened to go to RNC conventions. I am, and I'm not saying you can't be a black Republican, don't get your panties in a bunch. It's just this particular one. But I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. This is about Breonna Taylor. With all of the information that is being given, with all of the talking heads, with everybody dissecting what does wanton endangerment mean, does it really matter if none of that actually relates to the death of Breonna Taylor? I mean, put this into perspective. I hate to say put yourself in that situation, but sometimes, you know, that's kind of what we have to do. You are the close friend, loved one, spouse, mother, or father of someone who has died, as I am. I have buried a child, not due to violence, but I get it. The pain, the anguish. So I'll put myself in that situation. There was no criminal liability in my situation. However, if there was, as let's say, as related to some type of reckless handling of my child's care, that it was clear that someone had done something to him. And I'm not just talking, when, of course, in Breonna Taylor, we're not talking about reckless handling, right? We are talking about bullets flying, okay? And in all the dust clearing, we're going to grand jury, everybody's talking to me. I've got the AG calling me. People are questioning me and everybody around me. And when I say me, I mean you. And so it's time for this to go up and everybody's saying, you know, we got your back. Okay? We are the prosecution. We are for the people. You're the people. You're my people. We are the officers here to protect and serve, but we aren't going to be swayed by the fact that these are officers sworn to protect and serve, because if there's the possibility that we didn't protect and serve you, then we're going to handle it. So I'm ready. Okay, so what are we going to... Okay, I don't know what the charges may be, and I've got my civil attorney, and he's sitting by my side holding my hand, and, you know, no justice, no peace. We're all ready. And then I hear that despite... We know that there were only four individuals shooting. One person going in one direction, clearly, because they managed to find with no problem that her companion shot the officer. But all those bullets, six of which, maybe, that hit my child, and, you know, some going through the wall or windows or a neighbor, you know, it's because apparently folks are just up in there shooting like Yosemite Sam after Bugs Bunny, that after all of that going on, where my child ends up dead, and there's no question that one of these three people, if not all three, had bullets flying in her direction, that the only charges, which almost seems insulting, that the only charges are going to be charges that are related to the fact that there were bullets that were fired so recklessly, or if we want to be cute and use the language, wantonly, that they went into a neighboring apartment. And if you want me to simplify that even more, I'm being told that as it relates to my child's death, the only individual who is being charged is given the same charges that he would have received if he pointed the gun upwards as opposed to in the apartment where my daughter was standing. If he had merely stood in the doorway and in an effort to make a bunch of people who were yelling, shut up, you know, we always see that on TV, right? In movies and comedies and whatever, that he stood there and was like, hey, and shot up in the ceiling, which of course then bullets would have gone in another apartment. And that's the person who gets charged. Meanwhile, me and my family and friends we've already gone through the whole process of watching this play out over and over on television. People talking about it. Everyone, however well-meaning, and saying her name, reminding us that she has now become a symbol of a much greater cause for concern in our community and in our society as a whole. But when it comes down to it, Oprah magazine aside, Naomi Osaka with her wonderful face mask aside, me personally having a shirt with her picture on it that I certainly plan to wear because I won't stop saying her name. All of those things that, yes, thank you, because I need my child's death to mean something to someone other than just me, particularly given the nature and circumstances of her death. And yet, the only charge that someone receives, or charges, three of them, that individuals involved receive are charges that would be no different than if none of this, you know, shooting at the OK Corral went on and, you know, someone merely just shot a gun in the air because they got overly excited on the 4th of July. And when we talk about this case, because again, it's going to be talked about, you have to remember that. You have to. Because if you fall for this being a situation where there was any type of justice, as, and I'm talking about criminal justice, and that's if it's what you wanted, because not everybody is, you know, we're not homogenous. We don't all believe the same thing. Then if you wanted it, you didn't get it. If you didn't care, oh well. And if you were like me and several of my colleagues who knew, or we thought we knew, but turns out we were absolutely right, that there would be no charges, and even if they were, there would be no guilty verdict, then we get to say we were right, but, I mean, that kind of sucks too, right? So, let me tell you why, because again, as it relates to the charges themselves, they really don't relate to Brianna at all. I'm going to talk about them anyway, just so you understand them, but they don't really relate to her. So I'm going to speak on this portion specifically about why I and several of my colleagues, and in fact, I had quite a great conversation with an officer who has been on the scene and even served no-knock warrants of this type. We had a great conversation about this as well. So I will just explain my rationale. At the from the beginning, one of the things that worked in these officers' favor was the fact, or is, because it's an ongoing case, is the fact that the no-knock warrant, however anybody may feel about it now, many people didn't even know about it, but then once you found out about it, you're like, what the hell? The fact that it was legal at the time, which means that they were acting lawfully within their duties in terms of, now, again, I'm not talking about the fact that there's some questions about there being the wrong house and all of that, because that stuff, there's kind of been things said about that and backtracked from day one. I'm just talking about the mere fact, because there's been a lot of discussion about the mere fact that this was a no-knock warrant, therefore making it legal for them to approach and or enter that home without identifying themselves. If you don't know what it is, look it up. The fact that that was legal was step one in crafting a great defense in this case. The fact that although lawfully, Brianna's companion, her boyfriend at the time, who was initially charged and his charges dismissed, the fact that he also engaged in gunfire with the officers was that's step two in helping with the officers, because not only do you have the initial part, were they lawfully there and acting in a manner that was conforming to their duty as officers? And the answer to that, again, from the standpoint of anyone defending them if they were charged, or to even get to the point of charging them, if the warrant was valid, and the fact that the issue that the no-knock warrant, although no longer legal in Kentucky, was legal at the time, they're covered there, unless there was a problem with the warrant, which there doesn't seem to be. There just seems to be some questions about whether or not they were in the right place at the right time. The second piece, as I said, folds right into it in terms of the gunfire and return of gunfire. And since there is the end of, and of course we get into some extra ambiguity, right, about who shot first, but at the end of the day, if you've got police officers involved in the case, no matter how we may feel about it, good, bad, or indifferent, if there are some police officers involved in the case and the situation becomes a shootout, as in the shooting isn't going one way, then chances are that self-defense piece, the officers needing to defend themselves, is going to fall on the side of the officers, unless the shooting and gunfire is way out of line from a timing standpoint, one to the other. And in this case, there seems to be some alleged evidence, because it hasn't fully been released, that those events happened fairly contemporaneous with one another in terms of whether or not the officers began firing because they saw him with a gun ready to fire, or he fired understandably because there were individuals in the home and he didn't know who they were. And, you know, so, and as we know, the charges against him were dismissed. So that tells me that there is certainly, at worst, ambiguity. At best, he may not have fired first, because we don't just see charges dismissed against people, anybody, quite frankly, and this is a black man in Kentucky, dismissed because of, I don't know, just goodwill, especially when the officer was hit and injured. Okay, so those are things that were working in their favor going into this. And quite frankly, fairly dispositive of the issue if you get over, I mean, once you're over the hump of a properly executed warrant, no matter what kind of warrant it was, but it is lawful that you were on the scene. And the next step is that there is some, again, ambiguity at best. At worst, you were just flat out fired on first. Then you're going to get the self-defense piece. And then thirdly, from the standpoint of the police, they are still in a very precarious situation with easily allowing officers to, and your cities and your governments to be charged when there is some wiggle room for them not to be, because it puts a chill effect on other individuals who will do that job. And even more importantly, who will do that particular job, the most dangerous of what they do, which is executing warrants and going into homes. So from that backdrop, and combined with just the history as it relates to officers being charged, I did not think that there would be any charge for any of the officers. I think the one officer that was charged, it was sort of a reach and a compromise. His bullets kind of went everywhere, so let's say that he was the wild card in all of this. If this were for the old heads, if this was Lethal Weapon, he would be the Mel Gibson. For the new folks, if this was Bad Boys, then he would be the Will Smith. He's the one who's gonna smash up the cars when he just has to give a parking ticket. Okay, he's the one who's gonna take the shot when they're like, no, don't take the shot, we don't have a clear shot. This is the person who has been framed as that one. And I don't mean they framed him, I mean just put into a picture frame as that one. After all, he's the individual who was fired as well. So I don't think that any of that was an accident. In fact, I am inclined to believe that it was understood that there would need to be a pound of flesh in this situation, because the civil liability is done, and that you got to give something on the criminal side, but you got to make sure it's not so bad, because people are coming into this with the backdrop that, although very different standards, there has been some admission in some way that, at least from a 5149 standpoint, which is more or less the preponderance of the evidence, that the officers were responsible. Now, again, extremely different standard from criminal, where you have to have guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. But most people, no matter how much you explain that to them, well, I don't mean to insult anyone, but you get it. So just in case you're interested, because I'm going to wrap up shortly, I will explain the wanton endangerment charge. Section 508.60 of the Kentucky Code covers wanton endangerment in the first degree, which is what Officer Hankinson was charged with. Now, a person is guilty of wanton endangerment in the first degree when, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life, he wantonly engages in conduct which creates a substantial danger or death or serious physical injury to another person. This is a Class D felony. Now, of course, maybe you don't know, but for those of us who do this for a living, you go, okay, was a Class D felony. Well, what does that mean? Because you still haven't told me how it's punished. You just told me it's a Class D felony. So what is a Class D felony in Kentucky, and how is it punished? Class D felony is any offense defined outside, let's see. All right, so it defines, I'm not going to read you the boilerplate. it is punishable for an imprisonment in the state for at least one, but not more than 5 years. I didn't include the remainder of the code because that just goes through all the other classes. Now, to make clear for those who have not made it their business to be an attorney or a criminal, that at least one, but not more than five, that at least one is not a mandatory minimum. If there is a mandatory minimum for an offense, that will be specifically stated. So this is not a mandatory minimum. This is the range, but all of that could be suspended or there could be alternative punishment. These are things that happen happen on these Class D felonies quite often, especially if someone has a good record. Now, to not overstate that, Class D felonies also include a lot of other charges. If you go to the Code of Kentucky, it includes a laundry list of charges, quite a few of which are financial, which is why there are a certain class, of which this is not one, of Class D felonies that are expungible. This one is not listed as one of the charges that is expungible. So, of course, if someone were to be convicted of this, then they're stuck with it for life. Now, again, I told you before, I think this was a scapegoat situation here and that it was predetermined he would be the scapegoat. It was just a matter of finding a charge where things may not be so bad. I mean, we can assume he has a decent record, especially considering that he was a police officer actively on duty. At worst case scenario, and we would have known that by now, maybe some drunken disorderlies, but we would know that. So clearly he has a clean record because that would have come out a long time ago. So he's already walking in with a clean record, service to the community, his other records as an officer, hopefully that they don't evidence any type of aggressive behavior. So if he were to be found guilty, because there's a big IF in front of that, things may not be so bad anyway. In fact, from a defense standpoint, if I were representing Hankinson, I would use the same arguments for my client that the prosecution gave for why Mattingly and Cosgrove, again, Cosgrove, who at least one of his bullets, the FBI said hit Brianna, they were, despite that, And then they still don't know about the other ones. That whole thing is a little strange too. But at any rate, I would give my client the same argument that AG Cameron stood right in front of us with for these individuals, which is that it was self-defense. Why wouldn't it be self-defense for him if it's self-defense for them just because he's shooting from a different angle? So they're shooting from the door. He's shooting from the window. His bullets just happen to go other places because of where he's shooting from. And of course, because they go other places, it appears that he's just shooting indiscriminately. Okay. But can't the same argument be made as it relates to the other two? Not every one of their bullets went into Brianna or her boyfriend, and there doesn't seem to be any clarity on who the bullets belonged to that went into Brianna in the first place, except for maybe one from Cosgrove, who was not charged. So you see where my development of my argument, if I were representing even the individual who was charged, by the way, not with shooting Brianna. So you have that. Because again, when you say that it was wanton endangerment and under circumstances manifesting an extreme indifference to the value of human life, quite frankly, doesn't anybody do that when they shoot? That's why you're not, you shouldn't shoot guns into crowds or anything like that. Well, they're all arguably shooting in the dark. That was part of the issue here as well. No one knew who they were shooting at or when. And when you have folks not identifying themselves, allegedly, then, okay, I don't have to finish that. So as far as I'm concerned, if you are going to wrap Cosgrove and Mattingly in the blanket of the no-knock warrant combined with self-defense, there's no real reason that makes any sense whatsoever for Hankinson not to be wrapped in that same blanket other than the fact that he just happened to be firing from a different angle. Well, how freaking many people do you think are gonna fit in a doorway? I mean, what was he supposed to do? Crouch between the legs of one of them or do an overhand shot from the other? If we're all gonna be shooting, then I need to find my shooting spot too, because apparently that's what we're doing. We's here a shooting. So we have the press conference, of course, filmed from a majestic location, because, you know, we weren't going to just hold a press conference downtown with the people, right? They went to some historic library or whatever. I mean, you know, it was a big show. And one of the first things he said, because this wasn't just a press conference to tell us the charges went quick. Most of it was really an admonishment to the rest of the world about how we should manage our reactions. Now, ever so often, it was that I understand why you would react the way you're going to react, but this is about the truth. This is about the fact that there was an investigation that went on for months. This is about you wanting the truth or what fits your narrative. He went on a rant about outsider celebrities or influencers. I guess that includes me, although I don't think I'm any of them, but I do run my mouth, who try to get people to feel a certain way and act like they know what goes on in Kentucky. You're right. I don't live in Kentucky. I cannot definitively speak for what goes on and what goes through the minds of the people in Kentucky. And I will certainly also concede that every single person there protesting or reporting or even standing on the side pontificating in any way for whatever audience they have, just like I'm doing, is from Kentucky. Or maybe from Kentucky, but maybe not from that particular town. I get it. So he tries to admonish people like myself that essentially we're troublemakers because the good people of Kentucky know that this isn't how we roll on a regular basis. So we want to heal and move forward. We want to help the family move forward. We want to get together and hold hands and create task forces and show you that we are a strong, proud community, blah, 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 blah. You know, he got his quasi-Baptist minister on for a few moments. He did mention that he is creating a task force that he's going to participate in for reviewing, issuing, and executing search warrants in Kentucky and do a top to bottom review and, you know, make any revisions if necessary. Fine. There's lots of that going on, whether it's related to warrants or just criminal justice overall. I think that we are, if nothing else, if your state or your locality wasn't already looking at criminal justice reform, well, given that that has certainly been a buzzword that has just grown and got louder over the past 2 years and certainly in the past 7 months, you'd have to be living under a rock, and certainly your locality, particularly if you are in a fairly metropolitan area with people of color in that area, chances are there is some discussion of criminal justice reform going on. It's just a matter of what issues they specifically look at in your state. So we've got questions. So AG Cameron was specifically asked about who fired the other five bullets, because again, he started saying six, which, as I mentioned earlier, became an issue because the coroner's report only says five. And it was interesting because he got noticeably bothered and he stumbled over his words. And ultimately this was the beginning of him reverting back to the same refrain over and over again. The fact that, or the same group of answers, it was just a matter of where they fit. So it's kind of like if I were preparing someone for a press conference and I said, okay, this is, especially if it's someone who I didn't believe spoke well, did well speaking on their feet. I would give them an idea of some general responses that could be adapted for most of the questions, maybe not all, but most of the questions that we would anticipate them getting. And it appears that that's what he attempted to do, but he didn't always put the puzzle pieces exactly where they belong. He tried to put a lot of square pegs in round holes. So, like I said, he noticeably began to stumble over his words. And he talked about, oh, I'm not going to compromise the investigation. Criminal law is not going to address everything that happens. And the grand jury was walked through all of the offenses and the facts. They were able to make a determination that Detective Hankinson should be charged. Well, that doesn't answer the question about the other bullets. You said that although KSP, the Kentucky individuals, I can't remember what SP stands for, but the individuals who were the investigative team, the high level one, you know, like when you see on TV, like the CSI people, they weren't able to pinpoint, but the FBI did. So the FBI pinpointed one bullet. So what about the rest? So he didn't exactly answer that. He simply said there seemed to be some question. And if you watch closely, when that issue kept coming up towards the end, he sort of did a little dance around the possibility that the FBI might not even be right. He said, well, if our people didn't come to that determination, considering that they're the best of the best, but of course the FBI, these are the best of the best, but this is kind of hard. If you watched it, you'll know what I'm saying, but he definitely sort of even played a little, hide the ball a little bit as it relates to the fact that the FBI concluded, at least in, as it relates to at least one of the bullets, that Cosgrove is the one who fired it, and Cosgrove was not the person who was charged. And in my opinion, by him continuing to say over and over that not only were the other bullets, that there was still this ambiguity, that but also continuing to have to repeat, because of the whole issue regarding Cosgrove, that it was self-defense. The grand jury determined that it was self-defense. As far as I'm concerned, he is, if I were representing Hankinson, he's reinforcing my whole notion of self-defense. You're only trying to hang my guy up because his bullets went somewhere else, but you don't know whose bullets were whose. Whose bullets went into Brianna? And if you don't know which bullets went into her, then maybe one of those was Hankinson's. Maybe one wasn't. Maybe all of them were Cosgrove's, in which case, why'd you shoot her six times? Or maybe Mattingly. You just don't know. But as far as I'm concerned, from the Hankinson standpoint, you're helping that guy. So, as I said, he repeated those things so many times, I had him down verbatim. He was asked how long the grand jury deliberated. Didn't give an answer on that. No word specifically on how long the grand jury deliberated, despite saying that his office investigated this matter for months and hundreds of man hours, woke up and went to bed with it. Brianna always on their mind. The grand jury process began Monday morning, and I'm talking Monday as in 9/21, and concluded before noon today. When he really got to the point where he needed to sway the room to his side, he reminded everybody that he was Black. He mentioned his mother, and he had a few pregnant pauses with the, you know, I'm trying not to cry. I'm not gonna cry. Now, the next question, very interesting one. He was asked about the gender and racial makeup of the jury. Of the grand jury. And again, there's not a snowball's chance in hell you weren't going to be asked that question, no matter how this turned out. He tried not to answer it, but the reporter was very good in how they asked the question, which is, what rule keeps him from revealing it? Again, a question he should have absolutely been ready for. So he went through the pretense of stumbling over it, because I don't think he ever had any intention of answering it and reaching back to ask someone from his staff, which just came off as disingenuous to me. You do not become the AG without knowing the answers to some basic questions, and questions that you weren't just going to be asked in the Breonna Taylor case, but in any case. In fact, when we choose juries, there are literally challenges that are made based on racial makeup. So, at any rate, he, and like I said, you add to it the fact that there's no such rule that he could cite, and he clearly knew that, but it was all a pretense to say how he felt about it in the first place, because you don't just make a decision like this on the fly, which is what he said, which is him saying that he didn't want to give the information, essentially because the block is hot. And there's individuals out there, and he just didn't think it was important to give that information right now. And it's for the protection of the grand jury, which is, again, a bit of a, you know, whatever. First of all, the grand jury is the most secret of all, because they don't typically serve just for the one case. The grand jury is presented multiple cases. Now, given the largesse of this case, it could be entirely possible, and the rules, of course, of the courts in Kentucky, it is entirely possible that they have a system where they may have a grand jury that is impaneled just for certain things. But in other states, in mine included, grand jury service is for a certain period of time, not a long time. I mean, you'll probably, during your grand jury tenure, end up serving on a couple of panels. In my county, we have grand jury once a month, and they literally just have a super long day. Maybe even into the next day, because they are presented with the evidence in all the cases for that came up the month before. Now, I am inclined to think, especially given the nature of this, and there's no way that that grand jury, at least in the past 2 days, dealt with any other evidence or any other case besides this one. They may have been a special grand jury and panel for this, but the bottom line is, it is secret. Those individuals are long gone. No danger to them unless their names were to somehow be leaked by somebody who clearly doesn't want their job. And if that happened, whether the individuals were black, white, male, or female, there would be a concern, if you're actually concerned that something could happen to them. That would be a concern anyway, if your whole rationale is that those people, that everybody who feels a certain kind of way about this matter is so rabid and insane that we would attack anybody physically who's associated with it. So at any rate, that is where we are. So if you didn't take much from this, take the fact that Just Jonda, it has a sad, I told you so, on this one. Even if you're right, it's not a good place to be when it's something like this. It's just a hazard of the job and knowing how these things work. The other piece is, again, as I said in the beginning, no one was charged as it relates to her. And as it relates to the title, it's one of those things that has been discussed, and you've probably heard peeps of it here or there, although no one really wanted to embrace the concept of the old adage going back to the 1800s and perhaps even before, according to historians, that justice delayed is justice denied. And in this case, that the longer that there was a delay in any movement as it relates to potential charges in this case, that there it was more likely that the groundwork was being laid and we were just kind of being readied for the fact that there wasn't going to be any, at least as it relates to the criminal court. And just as a quick aside, I have no issue as it relates to her family in the civil settlement. And as far as individuals who very wrongly have asserted that the civil settlement in some way hurt what would happen on the criminal case, not at all. I think that the fix was in on this case already, which is part of the reason why it took so long, because after a while, it became less about whether or not individuals were going to be charged. It became more about how are we going to gracefully give a little something, maybe, and get this mess out of our hair. Because whether there were charges, guilty findings, not guilty findings, there are still things that need to happen. Every single task force, every single criminal justice reform bill, all of the things that are going on across the country and including Kentucky needed to happen anyway. So those are good things. Now, individuals should not, their lives should not have to be sacrificed for them. No, not at all. And I'm not suggesting that. I do not subscribe to these martyr theories. This person died so that we, no, F that. You want a martyr, you need a martyr for your cause, you be the martyr for your cause. George didn't ask for that, Ahmaud didn't ask for that, and neither did Breonna. I'm not saying that they didn't believe of their own accord in the cause that is being fought, but these individuals were killed. They didn't make personal sacrifices that they chose to make. So let's get off that crap. So at any rate, in moving forward, how is that done? I don't know. I wish I did. I'll use my mouth and my platform and my business, my family, and, you know, anybody who knows me knows you can always find me somewhere in the streets with my fist up. But as it relates to today, in this moment, in coming to terms with however predictable it may be, may have been for some of us, what has happened? I don't know. And again, I'm sorry as I was related it, because, you know, I'm going off script here. As it relates to the civil charge and those who, as I said, wrongly believe that hurt. No, it didn't. Civil cases are filed in these situations all the time. The only difference here is the fact that it took so long to get to the point where individuals were actually charged and the and negotiations or offers were clearly being made. Clearly offers were being made, that they just went ahead and wrapped that aspect of things up. And it's just a matter of you hearing about it before the fact as opposed to after the fact. But there have been settlements in many of these cases. This is no different than, you know, there being a settlement in the Rodney King case, there being a settlement in, you know, just in countless of these other cases, and most of them actually being a lot lower, by the way. This is actually one of the highest at $12 million. And no gag orders and their ability to still talk freely and openly and protest and do whatever. But one didn't have anything to do with the other, because quite frankly, the way that all of this went down and the fact that there was such a long pause, you know, you saw the writing on the wall. Unfortunately, for those who still want to buy into that aspect of the conspiracy, so to speak, the timing, I suppose, isn't great, considering that the settlement was reached, what, maybe about 2 weeks ago, something like that. And then, of course, this happens now, but like anything else, you can't choose your timing. You just move forward. And I don't know if any of us really anticipated that the deliberations with the grand jury would go this fast, especially given what they claim to be these mountains of evidence that they had to go through, which was the justification for this delay. I guess that's one of those things that'll always be debated, but I honestly don't believe that one hurt the other. So I am going to bid you all adieu. Thank you for spending this time with me and allowing me to not only inform, but, you know, express some of my own feelings of frustration in the best way that I know how, which is just to dissect it and share it with all of you. So as always, if you're thinking about it and want to talk about it, I'm thinking about it and probably want to talk about it with you, however difficult it may be. So let's be honest together. Follow me on social media platforms. I've got all the links in the comments for this particular episode. And I am also now on Amazon Music. So please follow me over there. And if you are an iTunes listener, don't forget those 5 stars. Have a good one.